Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, we have so much to share on health and healing. If you have a cough, pineapple juice is 500% more effective than cough syrup. Now, of course, you know that garlic is good, but you know that black garlic is substantially better. Resveratrol, you've heard about it. It's from grapes. You hear about more of its good healing power on today's show, and more evidence of ginger's medicinal properties. A lot more on health and healing. From our environmental segment, more news on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's the treaty that really benefits foreign investors, so they can then sue the United States. Doesn't make much sense. Martin Kaur of Global Research will tell you why it's really bad. Now, because this is our talkback program, I will be taking calls throughout the program. Our number to call in to share your questions, your thoughts, your comments, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, if time permits, I'll go into depth about J.P. Morgan Chase has engaged in mortgage fraud. That's not a question that's in any way being challenged. They engaged in securitization fraud that collapsed the housing market. Why didn't anyone go to jail? That's the question. Also, federal prosecutors declare mass incarceration to be fine and will continue, according to Obama and Holder. That's just good. Well, Bruce Dix in the Black Agenda Report doesn't think so. Now, this is a really unusual report. I've known about this for a long time, but I think now's the time to share it with the audience. It's called Psychotronic and Electromagnetic Weapons. What does that mean? It means that the science is there, that they can control human nervous systems by remote control. We'll take a look at Global Research's latest on this. And because I did over 30 years of psi research, not just anti-aging research, at the Institute of Applied Biology, I'll give you my own input on that. If time permits, I don't know that it will, we're going to look at crimes down, so why is police aggression increasing? And then for those who believe that, why would anyone be angry at America? Aren't we, as we're told constantly by media pundits, ideologues, aren't we that wonderful beacon of democracy? Well, to some. But David Lindorf says, think again. Terrorism with a human face and the history of America's death squads. As you can see, these are not the issues that are normally covered by most media. That's what we cover here. Also, it's always important to have a phone number in case for any reason you're not at a land station or over the internet. You just pick up your telephone and you can call one or two numbers and hear this program. Let me give you the numbers. 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. And 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456. And you can watch this program by going to Ustream, that's the letter ustream.tv, and search for Gary Null. We've known it a long time. For those of you who've gone to Europe, you know it simply because it's on everyone's table. Grapes. And served with every meal. Wine. And more often than not, if you're in the country, homemade wine. I will never forget the cellar that was dug into the side of a hill, and I was told that it was over 800 years old. They had multiple cellars dug into the... It was in the Alps, the Italian Alps, which there is no flat land. It's just rolling, steep terrain. And then you notice the leg muscles. This was the summertime. They were wearing those kind of shorts with the suspenders. And massive quads. Because all day long, the men and women are going up and down and up and down these hills. And then you come to a door, a big wooden door, thick. and you open it up, and immediately the temperature drops, and you go in, and you go down about 8 or 9 feet on stone or brick, and then you're in this very cool environment. This is a storage cellar. They had one for wines, and in one of these storage cellars, they had over 20,000 bottles of wine. So I asked a question. I said, how are you ever going to drink this? Well, you know, they give it to friends, but it's a part of their heritage. And they had some wine in there that was over 300 years old. I said, how would you know it's even drinkable at that? They don't care. They love their wine, and they have all different types of wine. But they exchange it also. A lot of people in these small hamlets, 8, 10, 12 different families, they have their own root cellars. But others don't take the roots out of the ground. Most Americans don't know this. There was a movie, I'm sure many of the older people have seen it, called East of Eden, with Raymond Massey and James Dean. And it's about this farmer in the Midwest who gets all of his lettuce harvest, or cabbage, and then there's a problem getting it to market, and it all rots on the train. That's it. Single crop, monocrop. You don't get it to market, you're in trouble. What we weren't told, and what most people don't know, is that your roots, carrots, for example, turnips, parsnips, these can stay in the ground 12 months a year. And you can go up in the middle of the winter and brush off the top and pull a carrot out. Or you can harvest them and put them in baskets, as you would apples, and they can stay. Now, if you spray a light mist made up of a beeswax, organic beeswax, then the apples will stay a long time because you're sealing the pores, and if the pores are not allowing water to evaporate, then the thickness, the firmness, the juiciness, and the crispness of the apple remains. And that's the way it historically was done. So if you wonder, how in the world did these people out west have apples when there were no apple trees yet planted or something else, it's because they generally were sprayed with this. Even I saw upstate New York at the first farm that I actually owned. It's all I could afford, didn't have much money. Today I would never buy a place like this because it was in the wrong location. Everything was built wrong. And yet it was hundreds of years old. But in the woods, there was this pit. And the pit was about 12 feet across. It was about 4 feet deep. And when I asked the woman who had been living there over 80 years, she was 90, I think 93, she said, oh, that's the smokehouse. And I'd seen smokehouses in West Virginia. I'd never seen one upstate. How did it work? Well, they would take whatever they had caught, rabbit, squirrel, deer, fish, and they would skin it down, and then they would soak it in salt water, and then they would put it on hooks in this little house, and the house looked something like a teepee, and then they would put a particular type of wood, and they would start a small fire, and it would keep small. There wouldn't be any flames. It was more embers burning. And if it was hickory, then you got a hickory smoke. If it was cherry smoke. It was almost always hardwoods. Locust is hard, cherry is hard, cedar, real hardwoods, walnut. And they would smoke it, but each day they would come in, they would continue to baste it with salt water. They had a big rag, they soak it in salt, and they would wipe it. And what salt does, it draws moisture out. And as a result, after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, that, let's say, 80 pounds of venison would be down to maybe 30 pounds. Then they would come in and they would completely paint it in honey, and then they would wrap it, and then date it. And they did it also to their cheeses. And then that went into a smokehouse. Now it was dry, and so in the wintertime, they would go out and they would cut a piece of this jerky off, whatever it was, come in and dice it up and throw it into a big kettle. And that kettle was making some kind of stew. And that was the principal meal. They would have a grain or a bean were root vegetables, and whenever they had it, some form of a meat, and they would make this stew. Interesting, I saw that also in Europe. I saw it in the mountains, not in the suburbs, but I saw them making wine the real way, and making cheeses, and making olive oil, making pâtés. It's just wonderful. If you've never spent time in the country, do so. I've allowed people historically to come up to my farm, especially those who would mobilize inner city children who never have a chance to get out in the country and certainly not be around animals, so they could interface and relate. They always had a good time doing that. When they see, oh, gee whiz, this is a goat up close, and look how friendly they are, and what do you make with goat? Well, you make goat's milk and goat's milk cheese, goat's milk yogurt. How do you do that? Or, you know, this is a French brick oven, but there's no fire in it. No, it's not supposed to have a fire. You put your kindling in and you light it up and you let the stones get really hot. Then you sweep out the embers and then you take a towel, you wipe it down, and then you put your dough in there. And the heat from the stone bakes your bread for you and also keeps your home warm. They'd never seen this stuff. I think we should do a lot more of that. In any case, these were the healthiest, most long-lived people in Europe. And that's because they've been outside a lot, eating real foods, taking their time, not rushing, dealing more appropriately with stresses of life, and they always had grapes. In my opinion, unsprayed, grapes are one of nature's most perfect healing foods. Now we've isolated one important healing nutrient within grapes. It's called resveratrol. The newest science, as published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, is that it controls glucose and helps lessen insulin sensitivity in diabetics. Now, they looked at a lot of studies. That's called a meta. Meta means many studies. And what they found was that the red grapes that give you the low-alcohol wine, the natural ferments, and lots of probiotics help control your blood sugar level and insulin level in men and women. So it's a good thing. So they're suggesting from as little as 10 milligrams up to as many as 1,500 milligrams a day for 2 weeks made a tremendous difference. All right, now you know why to have your grapes or grape juice. And I just started making a new juice. And here's what I do. I take a bag, which is about a pound, of fresh organic black grapes. They have the seeds in them. I wash it and then juice it, skin and all. Then I take a blood orange and a pink grapefruit, and I cut the peel off, but not the white inside. That's rich in nutrients. And I put that in, juice it. Then I take watermelon, and then I juice the watermelon. And it's a phenomenally delicious juice. But it also has got all the healing nutrients in it, so it's good for you. Now, if you really want to make it special in hot weather, add ice. After it's been juiced, throw some ice with that into a blender and make like a frothy ice cone, that kind of mouth quality. More evidence about ginger's medicinal properties. We've known how important ginger is for a long time. Now there's new research out showing that ginger can actually help lower blood sugar levels in people suffering from type 2 diabetes, and that it can also lower the upset stomach incidence. So two things it can do that no one knew it could do before, and that's good science, and it's important for us. It also improves immunity and lowers inflammation in your gastrointestinal system. I love garlic. I like it so much, I frequently just do I'll roast an elephant garlic, but I do it a little differently. I'll take a bulb of garlic and I peel it and then I put it into a low temperature, and about every 5 minutes I squirt what would be equivalent to about a teaspoon of lemon juice. And in the lemon juice, I also put some black pepper, red pepper, and some Himalayan sea salt, a little bit. So when it's done, I then put that all into a dish. I get a spoon and mash it. And then I put olive oil in there, extra virgin olive oil. And whatever season you like. Now, tarragon is a delicious a blend and mint. If you have mint and tarragon with crushed garlic, it is phenomenal. It's a whole side dish to itself. Well, here's what's going to happen when you eat that. One, you're going to lower your blood pressure. Two, you're going to help kill viruses and bacteria. Three, you're going to help put really good probiotics into your system. But then there's something else. It's black garlic. Now, I've raised black garlic, including garlic sprouts, which are extremely healthy. And by the way, in the next, I would say the next 6 weeks, I'll be broadcasting a live video stream from my homestead where I'm going to show you how to grow microgreens, edible flowers and sprouts of all kinds, over 100 different items that you could do in your own apartment or backyard or a little homestead if you have them for yourself or even to sell them as a business. And I'll show you how to do all that. And it'll be free. It's a public service just to help people because most people never think about doing these things. Now, why black garlic? It's been around a long time, at least 5,000 years. And the black garlic is closely related to the onion. In fact, its nickname was the stinking rose. And here's what is in the black garlic that makes it so important. It's been effectively demonstrated to help with 150 different diseases, reducing inflammation in your eye if you have cataracts, glaucoma, or macular degeneration, in your brain if you have dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, boosting your immune system if you've had bacterial or fungal or a viral or parasitic attack. It can help that. Tell a little story. There was a fellow in the audience who was a truck driver who came by the Fertile Earth farm that I had upstate for about 14 years. And people were invited to come in the summertime, and on the weekends they did. And on Sundays, people could come for the day, and they would see all the animals that had been brought there for help and finding homes. And there were lots of different animals. And I got them healthy and then found homes for them. And how to grow food organically and how to make tofu and crafts. Showed weaving, showed people how to weave and how to make quilts. Did all these wonderful things. In fact, just last Friday, one of the people who joined us, and I forgot to mention it. I couldn't have done it this Friday. I wanted to, but all day Friday from we left here at 7 in the morning. We didn't get back till 7 at night. We were filming in Camden, New Jersey, and in a tent city. And I went looking for the gangs, and we found them. And the stories about Camden from the people of Camden. And we were very fortunate by just walking up down the streets. The stories we found, I'll tell you that on an upcoming program. But in any case, I used to invite people come and learn if they wanted to at the farm. But one of the people that joined us 2 weeks ago Friday night was a person who was the first caretaker I had. Her name is White Feather. Excuse me. White Feather is a person who has lived close to the earth, and her and her family. But at one time, she and I produced over 100 different items each week for the food co-op, which was the first food co-op in New York State, the High Falls Food Co-op. And we created all the food for it, got it going, and it's grown since. People may not know the origins, but that's the origins. And we had some wonderful conversation about what it was like back then and how people would come up so eager to learn. And there were times there'd be 400 or 500 people up on a Sunday just to learn all this stuff. And making different dishes and showing them how to make things, how to store things, how to pickle things, how to make sauerkraut. And then people took these skills home with them. And that was good. In any case, I'm going to do it again next Friday. So next Friday, this is for people who want to go to have a dinner, organic dinner, vegan dinner, and then go to an art film. We went to see a wonderful art film. It was called The Lunchbox at the Lincoln Plaza. Small film, but shows you life of just a normal person in India today. Well worth seeing. In any case, it's you just pay for your own meal and you pay for your own ticket. This is for all those people who wanted to come when I was taking BAI's audience out to a Broadway play and dinner, but they couldn't afford it. And because all that money, plus out of my own pocket, went to BAI, this is inexpensive. You could probably get away with $40 for an evening, plus a lot of fun, great conversation, all nice people. So you'll call and you'll let Jeremy know if you want to join us, because I like to keep it no more than about 8 people. That number is 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065 for next Friday night. So we're back to looking at garlic and all the good things garlic does. Well, one day this trucker came, and he was talking about, you know, he wanted to learn some stuff about the farm, and I said, fine. And then he went to eat lunch, and he ate some kibbeh. This kibbeh is it's a Middle Eastern dish. It's raw meat where they'll dice up some seasonings, maybe some parsley and onion, put some salt and pepper on it. And I remember saying to him, do you think it's wise to eat raw meat? And he says, yeah. I said, but you know, you can get worms from that, and you can't see the worms now, but they're going to grow inside your intestine. No, it's not going to happen. He was a big trucker, like one of these big dudes. I said, okay. 3 months later, he comes into the city, comes by the office, and he said, man, he said, I got a problem. I said, what is? He said, it's this. And he pulls out a jar. Now, this was like a quart jar. And it was with alcohol. Inside of it, all coiled up, was a worm that they had taken out of him. The problem was, they didn't get the head. And this happens to be one of those worms that regrow. He said, you have no idea how painful this was. When I couldn't eat anything for 2 weeks to try to starve it, I took all these chemicals to purge it. And he said, man, he said, I don't want to go through this again. I said, okay. So I gave him a paste, and it was a black garlic paste. It was a lot of it. And I said, you have the paste each day, and you follow it up with some caprylic acid and paste, black garlic paste. And he did it, and the whole worm then purged itself. And he said he learned a lesson. No more raw meat. And by the way, you can get worms from eating raw fish or undercooked pork. And you don't know whether or not something's been properly cooked when it's a meat product. So that's just one more thing that this black garlic does. Now, what's the key to the black garlic that makes it so special? It's a nutrient called allicin. 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 It's a natural antibiotic. It can even help kill MRSA and other antibiotic-resistant drugs. So if I know someone's in a hospital, and if they're having terrible infections, I'm going to suggest to the doctor and nurse, give them allicin in its most pure form. And also you can give clove, because if you give clove and garlic, you're giving a 1-2 punch with sulfur-rich allicin and an enzyme called alanin or alanase, and that's terrific. It also protects you against fungi. The more garlic you eat, the less mosquito bites you're likely to have. And allicin is created within seconds when you're injured. And you crush a garlic, black garlic, and you get the alanase in it, and that uses as a natural healing agent. Phytochemicals, over 100 different phytochemicals are in black garlic. So, I'm sure you haven't heard of it, but how powerful is it? Well, you may have heard of what is called SAC, S-A-C. And that's based upon how well absorbed and how stable allicin is. Regular raw garlic, 0.32. The SAC from black garlic, 5.84. That's a huge difference in how powerful it is in also helping to kill viruses in the system. Also gives you more phosphorus, more calcium. It gives you 700% more calcium, 100% more phosphorus. Now, raw garlic gives you a little bit of protein, gives you about 2 grams. Black garlic gives you almost 13 grams. So you're talking about something that's really powerful, really important, and why it's good for you. And finally, if you have a cough, the latest research shows that pineapple juice is 500% more effective than cough syrup. That's right. Pineapple contains a lot of vitamin C and magnesium and manganese, and also bromelain, the enzyme that helps challenge inflammation. It also helps prevent blood clots, improves digestion, and it works on healing, antiviral, anti-inflammatory, antibacterial. So that's another one of those wonderful products that we should have more often in our system. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about how new research proves something that some of us have been saying for a long time. And that is, early life trauma is manifested in your DNA, and you can pass that on to your offspring. So just imagine that at some point in your life growing up, you were traumatized physically, verbally, sexually. And then later, long after the event, you have a child. If you haven't resolved this, that energy comes through. And this is a very important research report and published in Nature Neuroscience. Interesting. And also tomorrow, Monsanto, the GM soy is scarier than you think. We have new information on that. A lot to share. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment, and I'll start taking your calls now at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Welcome you. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We're broadcasting all over the world. And I've come up with something new. My hope is it's going to help a lot of people. Every day, dozens of individuals contact us to get some form of help. I work with the people who are most seriously ill, those who are terminally ill. That means there are a lot who are not. And I have hired multiple nutritionists, people with great backgrounds, to help people. And it's free. It's a public service. But those are based upon people who can get into New York City and sit across from someone. But I had a very compelling discussion with a person who was at a lecture that I did this week, before a kind of like a Save the Earth group, and I was happy to lecture, and I'm on the podium. And after this person came out and said that they were visiting their son, they were in Portland, saw me on PBS all the time, but would love to have a chance to get some counseling. And I explained that my days are packed, 7 days a week, helping really serious people. But then I thought, okay, I'm going to do something. So here's what I'm doing as of right now. I've set up a special phone number with my best nutritionist, Larry, master's degree in clinical nutrition, registered dietitian, etc. Very patient person. He will now be counseling people by telephone. Anywhere you can make this call, Canada, North America. Don't have it yet for Europe, but here is the number. And that way you do not have to come in. You can be anywhere, anywhere that you can make this phone call and speak with him. Let me give you the number. His name is Larry. 844-318-3183. 844-318-3183. And he would give you the kind of insights and help that Dr. Nadia and all the others have given over the years. Over 30,000 people we've helped. And it doesn't cost you anything. But don't stay on there a long period of time. And I know some people, once they get someone on the phone, they don't want to hang up. Remember, there's going to be a lot of people seeking help. He's just one person. So be thoughtful about the fact that whatever he's giving you is what he can give you. So you can call Larry, free nutritional counseling, by phone. Never done this before. 844-318-3183. Also, this coming Sunday will be the last time that our Running and Walking Club, which had a wonderful, huge group today, will be starting people from scratch to train to get into shape or to train to do the New York City Marathon. We meet at 9 a.m. at 90th Street and 5th Avenue in Center Park. Also, put this date on your calendar, and please come, bring signs. We're going to protest on May 4th at 34th Street and 11th Avenue at noon, across the street from the Jacob Javits Center. That's where the American Psychiatric Association is having its meeting, and I'll be one of the keynote speakers. This is sponsored by Stop Psych Assault and Free Justina. We're protesting. This is all from Mind Freedom. They're doing a great job of helping teach people about what has happened to the psychiatric industry, and it is an industry. It's our chance to speak out. So join me May 4th, 34th, and 11th Avenue at noon on a social action issue, as you've joined on dozens of protests over the years for closing down nuclear power plants, stopping gas hydrofracking, stopping genetic engineering, stopping mandatory vaccines. One more thing that we can add to what we are concerned about and do something about. Let's say hello to Tom from Massachusetts. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Gary.
How can we help you today?
Old to be 30 and do what you, Gary Null, knows. Our son, we love what you do. We do as much of it as we can, but our son is, you know, taking your powders, drinking good water, juicing. He's tremendous. He's a fireman, and, you know, when he has time off, he goes and does these things. He runs, he does yoga, he lifts weights. So what could be the problem? I have one concern. He seems to do everything in a half an hour. Whatever he's doing, he does it. I mean, his arms are like getting close to thigh size, and yet he can really run. I mean, that's something, it's hard to believe. But so he makes a maximum effort, and he puts back, but I'm concerned that, is there such a thing as maximizing too much, being, you know, too short a time, working too hard? He's not said anything. I'm just a worrier, I guess.
Okay. First, understand you have to break what you're saying in its pieces for us to fully appreciate it. A, I think you should be very, very happy what your son is doing. He's a firefighter. firefighters frequently have to carry 70 to 90 pounds of air. Mind you, they're not putting oxygen, they're putting air, which is not flammable, and they only have about an 8-minute supply at that to carry it into a place. They have to have the hoses, they have to be able to carry someone out, they have to be able to get up and down ladders. So the stronger he is, the more likely he is to save himself and someone he's rescuing. And it's an extremely noble profession that he is in. So our society needs these gallant men and women because they are always first responders, and they're necessary for the commons. Separately, the fact that he is bulked up and trying to get himself in great shape, I wouldn't be concerned about that. Because men in particular go through stages where they become really preoccupied with something that they feel good about. It's enhancing their sense of self, their masculinity, their self-esteem, and in this case, it's very practical. There'll come a point where he'll probably do something else. He might go into long-distance running. I did. At one point, I was 238 pounds, all muscle. I have the same waist today I had then. Some of those photos you can see, because what I did is I wanted to, it had nothing to do with narcissism or wanting to see myself. I just wanted to see how was I changing over the years. And the reason I did this, because I had a discussion once with my uncles, and all of them except one was out of shape. And he was in shape because he was a referee. He refereed basketball games. And so he was running up and down the court. But all the rest were out of shape. And they said, well, this is normal. And I said, no, it's not. They said, Gary, once you're out of high school or college, you're going to see. And I said, that's only if you allow yourself to, because you all don't do anything. Now, not that they didn't do anything, they didn't do anything for themselves as far as exercising. So I simply took a picture of myself posing every year, and then I wanted to see year after year after year after year, where was their change? Were they right? Would I, you know, become broken down and flabby and fat, out of shape as they were? Mind you, they all smoked and they drank. They thought it was just normal way of socializing, and I never have smoked or drank or taken drugs or anything. That's not a moralizing statement. It's just that I didn't see the point of it. I didn't see why I should. I didn't see how it would make me a better person if I did these things. In any case, I found that it was just the opposite. Not only was I not breaking down, I was actually getting in better shape. In fact, I finally gave up running full-time and winning in races in Central Park and elsewhere when I was just bored to death of going around the park. And I never will forget the day I'm running around the park and I'm thinking, wow, I've probably done 200 races. I'm bored with this. And just then, I see a group of walkers coming in the opposite direction. I thought, now that looks cool. I could do that. So the next week, I went out to the park and there was Helene Britton and Harry Jacobson and Stella Cashman, the three people who really contributed tremendously and supported racewalking community in New York for decades. And I asked them to give me some pointers, and they did. They were very generous with their time. And mind you, I was a top runner, right? It would be nothing for me to run around there and be having a conversation at a 5-minute 5:02 4:58 mile. But speaking of that, tell you how interesting the Upper West Side is. I digress for a second. I'm walking down the street, and who do I see? Patricia McCann. Now, for some people, younger people, they wouldn't know Patricia McCann. For all the older people in the audience, the McCanns were the first family of radio for probably 50 years. They were right up there with Lon John, with the gambling family on WR. And Patricia was the last who decided she didn't want to do that anymore. I've asked her to come on Progressive Radio, but she didn't want to. She's having a wonderful life. But you talk about following principles of good health, she does it. She looks, I don't know how old she is, I'm going to guess she's 70. She looks 40 years old. I mean, right up close, right out in the sun, you don't see the wrinkles, she's got vitality. Then say goodbye to her, and I walk about 50 feet, and I hear, hi, Gary, and I look around at Saul Zabar. Now, Saul tomorrow is turning 87. Now, I've known Saul for a long time, since I've been in New York, he and his family. He's a nice guy. And And he always had these wonderful old world stories to talk about his family who founded Zabar's and how he and his brothers have been in business and worked and what it means, but how people have changed, how eating habits have changed or not, and how the whole Upper West Side has changed into either banks or malls like the Gap or Banana Republic and or drugstores. And yet he used to know every one of the 10 different merchants on every block between Zabar's and where he lived on the Upper West Side, and he walks to work every day. Say goodbye to him, and then I ran into Gary Murky. Mind you, this all within about 15 minutes. Now, those of you probably wouldn't know Gary, but he was the one who won the first New York City Marathon. I believe he won the first and the second, or first and third. And he is one of the most liked athletes in American history. He opened up the Super Runner stores. These were small stores, and he staffed them with runners and was always there to help people, never rushed anyone. And he sold his chain recently, and he kept one. I said, why'd you keep one? He said, Gary, he said, I think he is 74, 75. He said, what am I supposed to do? All I know my whole life is running and racing and being around athletes. I wouldn't know what to do each day. He said, knowing that I've got this other little store down on Times Square, I got some place to go each day, I got something to talk about with athletes, then every day is a new day for me. I'm like, good for you, Gary. First, he's just one of the nicest people you'd ever meet. His name's Gary Murky, and I've known him for a long time. We used to race together, and we've trained together. And he's an inspiration to see at his age how great a shape he's in, which tells you. And then again, I saw Sam Skinner racing. Sam, I'm guessing, I could be wrong, I'm guessing Sam must be around 70, and Sid Howard's about 75, two of the greatest athletes on the planet. All, and you think, gee whiz, one simple walk up the Upper West Side, on a street, how many people you meet, what you have in common. In this case, it was the athleticism and how you change and what changes in you. But once you've gotten into shape and once you've found that groove and once you've found that rhythm, you don't want to get out of it because you know the consequences. When you stop exercising, your muscles are going to turn to fat. You're going to get fatigued. You will end up having the inability to maintain your blood sugar or blood pressure. You're going to have problems sleeping. You're going to have energy and fatigue. Well, nobody wants that. So when men and women get themselves into shape, they stay in shape more often than not. It's getting the people to believe they can get into shape. So I think that what your son's doing, he'll find other ways. I did. I didn't like. One day I just started race walking. But here's the interesting part. There was a race the following week. And there were about 150 people in it. And it was a 10K, once around the park. So I'm thinking, wow, I ought to do pretty good in this. Gun went off and everybody goes out. And then I started realizing that I'm using different muscles. My shins are on fire. I'm having a hard time breathing. I never had a hard time breathing. I could run a marathon backwards. But now I'm getting slower and slower and slower. Till finally I don't see anyone. Until finally I'm up at Cat Hill, which is the final stretch from 72nd Street to 90th Street. And I'm thinking, oh goodness, I'm almost finished. So I get up there. And by the time I got up there, everybody had gone. That means everybody had finished the race, they had their award ceremony, and went home. I'm still on the course. And there's this one woman, her name is Queenie Thompson. And Queenie was standing there. She says, do you have a little different thought about what it is to race walk? I said, yes, I do. I have a completely different perception and a whole newfound respect for it. She says, well, you'll get faster once you get the rhythm of it. And it took me a while. And then, you know, that was, I got that rhythm. But that was at age 40. And I would never stop race walking now. But it, you know, but I had to stop the running in order to appreciate the race walking. I had to stop building the bodybuilder in order to appreciate you don't have to have those bulky muscles in order to have strength and stamina. These are myths that we have to go through. So your son will go through those in his own time. Thanks a lot, Tom, for your call. Appreciate it. And let's say hello to Anne from New Jersey. Hi, Anne. Your turn.
Yes, I just wanted to know where you can get black garlic.
And that depends. First, you can grow it. It's very easy to grow. You can get the seeds from Seeds of Change. That's Seeds of Change.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Or you can go to some of the Chinese markets or the Indonesian markets, and then you can get some of the garlic there. And in the health food store, you can actually get black garlic capsules. So if you need it for health reasons, that's what I would suggest.
No, I like to learn how to grow it.
Well, again, you grow black garlic the same way you grow regular garlic. There is no difference in how you grow it. It takes a while. Garlic is a long-time grower. But if you plant the black garlic around your other seedlings, the natural insecticide in the garlic that protects it from insects will prevent other insects from eating the other seedlings. All the best to you, Anne. Now, let's go to our environmental segment today. This is from Martin Corr of Global Research, and I'll quote it. It's short, but it's important. In the public debate surrounding the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, an issue that seems to stand out is the investor-state dispute settlement system. It would enable foreign investors of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement countries to directly sue the host government, that means the United States government, in an international tribunal. In most U.S. Free trade agreements with the investor-state dispute provisions, the tribunal most mentioned is the International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes, an arbitration court hosted by the World Bank in Washington. And this group would be a powerful system for enforcing the rules of the treaty, which is currently being negotiated by the U.S. and 11 other Pacific Rim countries. Any foreign investor, any, from any country, can take up a case claiming that the government has not met its relevant obligations. If the claim succeeds, the tribunal could award the investor financial compensation for the claim losses. If the payment is not made, the award can potentially be enforced through the seizure of assets of the government that has been sued, or through tariffs. All right, now, that's all I want to say. Let me just repeat this so you understand what is being meant here. This is in the fine print. If the payment is not made, the award can potentially be enforced through the seizure of assets. That means that if hypothetically, they wanted to bring a way of extracting a mineral out of the ground, and we didn't want them to because it violated our national or state Clean Water, Clean Air Act, they could sue for lost damages. And let's say they got a $10 billion settlement in a state. The state couldn't afford that. There's no state that could afford that in the United States. Then that means they could seize land. They could take assets. That is how vulnerable this government and its 600 lobbying agents who are part of this have put us at risk. All for what? For just more money made like the Clintons in the future? You've been lied to, you've been manipulated, and you've been sold out. Just be aware of that. Not good. All right? One more reason to say no. I'm going to close today's show with a report. This is interesting, something for you to consider and think on. This is from a person named Bebek from Global Research. Quote, in March 2012, the Russian Defense Ministry stated, quote, the development of weaponry based on new physics principles, direct energy weapons, geophysical weapons, wave energy weapons, genetic weapons, psychotronic weapons, etc., is part of the state arms procurement program for the next 7 years, end quote. The world media reacted to this hint on the open use of psychotronic weaponry by the publication of scientific experiments from the 1960s, where electromagnetic waves were used to transmit simple sounds into the human brain. However, most of them avoided saying that since then, extensive scientific research has been carried out in this area throughout the world. Only a Colombian newspaper, El Espectador, published an article covering the whole scale of the achievements Britain's Daily Mail, another exception, wrote that research in electromagnetic weapons has been secretly carried out in the United States and Russia since the 1950s, and that previous research has shown that low-frequency waves or beams can affect brain cells, alter psychological states, and make it possible to transmit suggestions and commands directly into someone's thought processes. High doses of microwaves can damage the functioning of internal organs, control behavior, or even drive victims to suicide, end quote. In 1975, a neuropsychologist, Dr. Donald Justison, director of the Laboratories of Experimental Neuropsychology at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Kansas City, unwittingly leaked national security information. He published an article entitled "American Psychologist on the Influence of Microwaves on Living Creatures' Behavior." In the article, he quoted the results of an experiment described by Joseph Sharp, who was working on Pandora, a secret project of the American Navy. Quote from the article, "By radiating themselves with these voice-modulated microwaves, Sharp and Grove were readily able to hear, identify, and distinguish among the nine words. The sounds heard were not unlike those emitted by persons with artificial larynxes. That this system was later brought to perfection is proven by the document which appeared on the website of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in 1997, where its Office of Research and Development presented the Department of Defense's project, quote, communicating via the microwave auditory effect, end quote. Here's what it says. Mind you, this is the Department of Defense, and this is the EPA. Quote, an innovative and revolutionary technology is described that offers a low probability of intercept radio frequency communications. The feasibility of the concept has been established using both a low-intensity laboratory system and a high-power RF transmitter. Numerous military applications exist in areas of search and rescue, security, and special operations." End quote. But in 2007, the Washington Post wrote on the same subject, quote, "In 2002, the Air Force Research Laboratory patented precisely such a technology using microwaves to send words into somebody's head." Let me repeat this. This is the Washington Post. Quote, "In 2002, the Air Force Research Laboratory patented precisely such a technology using microwaves to send words into someone's head." Richard Garcia, a spokesman for the Research Laboratory's Directed Energy Directorate, declined to discuss that patent or current or related research in the field, citing the lab's policy not to comment on its microwave work. In response to a Freedom of Information Act request filed for this article, the Air Force released unclassified documents surrounding the 2002 patent, records that note that the patent was based on human experimentation in October 1994 at the Air Force Lab, where scientists were able, listen carefully, to transmit phrases into the heads of human subjects, albeit with marginal intelligibility. Research appeared to continue at least through 2002. Where this work has gone since is unclear. The research laboratory, citing classification, refused to discuss it or release any other materials. End quote. That's from Washington Post 2007. Now, we can only stress again that the world media avoids publishing the full scale of the progress in the research of the remote control of human nervous systems. Dr. Robert Becker, who was twice nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for his share in the discovery of the effects of pulse fields at the healing of broken bones, wrote in his book, Body Electric, about the experiment from 1974 by J.P. Chapsitz, released due to the Freedom of Information Act request, quote, from the Freedom of Information request, quote, "In this investigation, it will be shown that the spoken word of hypnotist may also be conveyed by modulated electromagnetic energy directly into the subconscious parts of the human brain, i.e. without employing any technical devices for receiving or transcoding the messages and without the person exposed to such influence having a chance to control the information input consciously," end quote. Mind you, that's the actual Freedom of Information Act that they were discussing. in one of four experiments where the subjects were given a test of hundreds of questions ranging from easy to technical ones. Later, not knowing they were being irradiated, they would be subjected to information beams suggesting the answers to the questions that they had left blank, amnesia for some of their correct answers, or memory falsification for other correct answers. After 2 weeks, they had to pass the test again. Dr. Robert Becker talked about the results, but these results were never published. So it's rather evident that these experiments, the messages were sent to the human brain in ultrasound frequencies which the human brain perceives, but of which the subject is unaware. So, transmitting human speech into the human brain by means of electromagnetic waves is apparently, for the researchers, one of the most difficult tasks, and it is much easier to control human emotions, which motivate human thinking, decision-making, and actions, and people claim to be victims of experiments where those devices complain, aside from hearing voices, of false feelings, including aches of internal organs, which no physician was able to diagnose. But other countries have done this, and they have talked about it. But here's what we should know. All of these technologies are in conflict with the Nuremberg Code for experiments on what unwitting human subjects. In fact, in 2001, the U.S. Army Defense News wrote that Israel was experimenting with those weapons on Palestinians. As well, ousted Honduran President Manuel Zelaya, while under siege in Brazilian embassy in Honduras, complained that he had been subjected to a, quote, electron bombardment with microwaves, which produces, quote, headaches and organic destabilization. That was published in The Guardian. And so it goes. I'll just keep you posted on this because people have asked me about HARP, and we've done a program based upon the book Angels Don't Play This HARP with Nick Begit, which convinced the European Parliament of the possible use of this system to manipulate minds of whole populations. And this was a part of their European Parliament's Science and Technological Options Assessment. And there was a panel called Crowd Control Technologies. So I'll go into this in greater depth, and we'll do a Monday night progressive commentary on it. Just to keep in mind, when we had Occupy and other movements and protests, and some of the time they were shooting energy waves against people that would cause them to burn, lose their orientation, have massive headaches, and not be able to focus or concentrate. And yet, they would then deny that anything was seriously done. Oh, they're on this. Now we have to ask, where have they been using it, on whom have they been using it, and to what extent? More to come. We're out of time. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program.